where we're moving on now.
Broadcasting from atop the Hensler Financial Building in the heart of Georgia's financial district, Kennesaw, Georgia, this is Money Talks.
We're back. You guys like some George and Wheezy?
Gotta love some George and Wheezy.
They were an awesome couple, right? You never want to consider that George and Wheezy might be getting a divorce.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Wouldn't wish that on them.
Oh, heck no. Anyway, they seem so happy. Although, you know, physically maybe a mismatch. You let me look at them a little bit. Yeah. Anyway, so we've got...
Troy just alienated our millennial audience.
Why is that?
I'm just saying. George and Wheezy.
George and Wheezy. I mean,
do you know who
they're
they are?
I know who they are.
You're a millennial.
George and Wheezy.
I'm living on up. Quit throwing that in my face.
Wow.
I've got gray hair, all right? That exempts me from millennial status.
He's grandpa millennial.
Grandpa?
Yeah, he's like the oldest millennial.
I didn't mean to throw it in your face.
Yeah, well.
I'm just joking.
I don't know.
Sorry. I embrace it.
I'm just telling you, man. I still like the Jeffersons. I don't care if somebody younger than me doesn't know who they are. All right, well, let's get into some of these questions we have. And before we do that, let's let folks know how they can get in touch with us. You can email us at drgene@hensler.com. That's spelled H-E-N-S-S-L-E-R. .com, Dr. Gene, D-R-G-E-N-E. If you want to give us a call and talk to a human being, you can call 770-429-9166. You can also call our question hotline, 1-855-429-9166. Leave your question. It'll be recorded. We'll play it back on the air and then answer the question right behind it. So you can also go to our website, Hensler.com. You might be able to work out some of your answers to your own questions if they're broad enough, you know, not terribly specific. We've got lots of information on there to help you do just that. So, guys, let's go to our good friend Bill Murray, who says, my father is age 92, spending down his assets for nursing care expenses. His portfolio consists of 84% Vanguard's total stock market index, VTSAX, as well as 16% Vanguard real estate index. The real estate index is a taxable account. Year to date, his real estate index is down 10%, while the broad market is up 3%. I know all that changed maybe this week in the meantime after you've sent us the question, but says, should we keep the real estate or sell it in order to buy something else? Maybe Vanguard Global X U.S. REIT, maybe something entirely different. So before I get into the details of any of that, KC, surely you have an opinion on just how exactly we ought to do.
Yeah, let's go to the firm philosophy, the 10-year rule. I mean, if he's drawing down the assets, then I would think there is a need for some fixed income in there somewhere. You know, he's currently allocated 100% in growth investments, it looks like. So based on that, something entirely different would be putting some allocation of fixed income based on how much money we think he's going to need in the next 10 years.
And the reason we do that is because of volatility. It's the change in price in the assets that you hold, obviously equities or stocks, can be very volatile. Just as we came into this, you know, this show today talking about how the market was up almost 8% at one point this year, this very short 2-month-old year, we've since lost 10%. We rallied back a little bit, and we're losing it again today. I mean, this is volatility. This is the kind of stuff that while none of us embrace it as investors, we all understand that it happens.
You just don't want to be stuck in a position where we get to, a, you know, 2008 and the market's down 50%, then you got to go sell to cover your living expenses.
Exactly. And you know, if a 92-year-old individual has 16% of their assets, in, even in real estate, and they've fallen so hard, you know, 10% year-to-date, you know, it's here's my take on it from an investor point of view as well. Just raw investments. Thinking about exactly what's driving real estate lower, it's, as we talked earlier, a lot of it is interest rates.
Interest rates,
and
yep.
What is expected for the rest of the year? Interest rate increases. You know, we just said the options market tells us we've got three more to come this year. Whether that comes true or not, I will assure you that one or the other of those two funds is going to get beaten up. So you know, if we decide that we're going to pull the plug on interest rate increases, what does that say? That says the economic fundamentals have fallen apart so badly that how much more hope is left in the stock market?
Right. That's either the thing. Either way, you're in trouble with the real estate.
Well, and the Vanguard total stock market has been up generally, just given what the market's done. So you could trim some from there, put that into fixed income, sell the real estate, take your loss and invest it in something you think is going to rebound.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so, it says it's in a taxable account, so that's definitely something to look
at. Sure, so you can offset some of the gains of selling to go to bonds a little bit for your withdrawals.
Yeah, we don't know what his basis is in the real estate, even though it's down 10% year to date. Who knows when he bought it.
But yeah, and it could be in a retirement account too. That's not really laid out, right?
Yeah, it says it's in a taxable account.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I missed that part. Maybe I should read a little better. I
was the question out loud. I'm pretty sure you should listen better.
Maybe I should listen to myself.
Listen to yourself.
Yeah. Wow. I get a rebuke in the middle of an answer. How about that? Thanks, Casey.
At least you're arguing with yourself.
I'm sure it's not the first time.
Well, probably not the first time I haven't listened to myself as I was saying something either. All right. So moving on. Now that I've taken that beating. We do have a question here on our question hotline, and why don't we just go on and do that one? Here we go.
Hey, my name is Jason, and NVIDIA keeps making the news headlines on my newsfeed. Quickly looking at it, it seems like just another tech stock. Is there something special about this I should be watching? Jim Cramer likes it, but he also said Intel is cheap right now. Thanks.
Yeah, well, Jim Cramer says a whole lot of things.
Bye.
Yeah. He'll tell you that about one day and maybe sell the next day. It's
show is missing is some hotkeys. We need some sound effects and crazy explosions and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm sure that would make it a whole lot better.
I'm telling you.
Nothing like having a noisemaker that seconds as a radio show, right? Anyway, when I look at the two companies, yes, absolutely. We're talking about, two companies, technology, they're not new. Long-term growth expectations on NVIDIA, 12.67. You look at earnings growth over the past 5 years, they're up 33.7%. You look at Intel, which, we like this company, especially for the fact that it's got a good solid dividend. Growth expected a good bit lower, 8.5%. Over the past 5 years, earnings have grown at about 10%, so the growth story is not quite as good. But then you look at the fact that it does have a dividend, 2.6% dividend thereabouts, and it's covered 2.4 times by the earnings. I really like that. NVIDIA, not to be shorted, does actually pay a little dividend, 0.27% yield, covered very well, 6.5 times, but it's not hardly enough dividend to talk about the fact that you get a dividend. So overall, I guess, it depends on what you're looking for. I think if you're looking for something that looks more reasonably priced, I'd go with Intel for sure. NVIDIA, still in the game, doing lots of interesting things with some of their video chips and that sort of thing. But when I look at the basic fundamentals on the company, I would, if I'm telling you to buy one and not the other, I'm going to tell you every time, buy Intel, avoid NVIDIA.
Does NVIDIA meet our criteria?
They do. Yeah, both of them do. They're both pretty solid companies. You know, their earnings quality is within our standard. Like I say, the biggest thing that I like, it's pretty rare to find a tech stock that pays you a pretty solid dividend. Mm-hmm. We do recommend it in our equity income portfolio. So it's in that group, a portfolio that actually has done quite well for quite a while now. So it's pretty widely loved around here. So, guys, we've got enough time probably to get another question out here. If you would like, we can talk about Beverly from Ballground, who says, I turned 70 and a half in January 2018. I understand I need to start taking my RMDs. That's required minimum distribution in 2018. Saw an article that said use your age as of December 31 to determine the divisor from the life expectancy tables. Man, is that ever confusing, huh? Since I'll be 71 on December 31, 2018, will I use the divisor for age 71 or the divisor for age 70, my age on December 31, 2017? In the same article, an advisor was talking about a man with the same issues turning 70 and a half in 2018 and said he needed to take two RMDs in 2018. I'm assuming one for the age 70 divisor and one for 71. Here's your question, Casey. You've been waiting on this?
Yeah.
I need to take two RMDs? Which divisor am I supposed to use for a single RMD? I want to make sure I'm not penalized. Very important point, right? For not taking the correct amount, and I don't want the taxes to be impacted on two RMDs if I can avoid it. So what's your advice?
So I don't know if I've got time to answer the whole question. I'll tell you the penalty part is key, because if you don't take the right amount, the penalty is 50% on the amount that you don't take. So
you did some math behind this, right?
I did, and this is an interesting question and one that we get, you know, relatively frequently, because it is confusing. So the required beginning date for a mandatory withdrawal is age 70 and a half, or the year that you turn age 70 and a half. So
Couldn't they have made it clear?
Maybe. So basically, if you're born on June 30th, 1947, you would have turned 70 and a half in 2017, because you would have been 70 and 70 and a half in the same year. And if you were born July 1st or after 1947, you don't turn 70 and a half until 2018, this year. So your required distribution begins this year in 2018. Now, you have up until April of the year following the year you turn 70 and a half. I know. Have I lost anybody yet?
No.
I'm right with it.
But we do this for a living, though.
Your mandatory withdrawal. So you can delay up until April of the year following the year you turn 70 and a half.
Year following the year.
However, if
not
you do that, you would have to take two in that year. So in other words, if I turn 70 and a half in 2018, like Beverly here from Ballground, then I would have to take my mandatory withdrawal by April of 2019. I can take it in 2018, and we generally recommend that people do that for the most part, because that way you avoid having to take two the following year. If she delayed till April of 2019, she could take one, you know, anytime before April 1st, 2019. She would have to take her second 2019 RMD by December 31st, 2019.
And it's all taxable income.
It's all taxable income. Yeah. So, I mean, there are rare cases when it makes sense to defer.
Such as if you're still working and you're going to retire this year and your income's higher.
Exactly.
And, you know, things like that.
Yeah, depending on where your tax bracket is and things like that. But for the most part, you know, we generally recommend, you know, the average client, go ahead and take your 2018 RMD. If this is your first year, go ahead and take it. Now, getting back to the point of, you know, someone born – Let's say you've got two people, identical portfolios, and let's just call it $1 million. I did some math here. I know y'all are surprised. So if two people, one born on June 30th, 1947, would have taken their first RMD. Their first RMD would have been for 2017. Another person born July 1st, 1947, so their first RMD is not due until 2018. If they were to each start with $1 million portfolio, and let's assume a 10% growth rate just to start with, then who do you think is going to be better off? I mean, I would think the person that gets to defer that RMD for a whole extra year is going to be better off.
Sure.
And I'd be right about that, but only for like the first 10 years.
Assuming
that they
higher
take their
rate.
Distribution, you know, on early, let's say they take the distribution on January 1st of the year that they're required to take it. So 2017 RMD, take it on January 1st, 2017. 2018 RMD, January 1, 2018. If you do just a linear growth, 10% a year, you know, the break-even point is age 79, so about, you know, 9 to 10 years before you break even. And then it flips on you. So then the person who actually took their RMD earlier, so the person born before June 30th in 1947, would be better off after that, until it flips again, like in, you know, age 108.
108, yeah. Ripe old age of 108.
Now, a lot of that has to do with the growth rate. I mean, if you assume a lower growth rate, then the period of time where the person who delayed taking their RMD is better off is longer. So if you make
and
it 5%.
Don't you figure that that's what exactly has happened? The IRS put this chart together, assuming that the growth in that retirement account is going to be lower. Around what did you come to a number?
I mean, if you drop it all the way down to about 2%, there's really no point. I say no point. It'd be about 118, 119 where you would break even.
A long time from 70.5. Right?
It's just interesting that they've made such a difference. You know, if you go back to that 10% growth rate, at age 100, the difference is about almost $200,000 between taking it, just deferring your RMD for 1 year.
Yeah. So basically what you're telling me, Casey, as a self-avowed finance geek, is that the IRS put together this chart based on about a 2% growth rate, and they assumed that the person that took theirs later would never be worse off than the one who had to take theirs earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that – I assume that probably factored in. They're clearly using a much lower expectation for growth than 10%. I mean, and 2% is what gets you down to – I would think they would want to equalize it relatively, across the board. If you get people born one day apart, it seems strange that they could be impacted that much just on when they're forced to take their distributions. But
interesting.
That's
and you could figure out what the government was thinking too. That's
I don't know about that.
Yeah, did you say you could decipher whether the government was thinking or not? Is that what I heard you say, Sean?
The answer to that. Yes, they're not.
Okay. Well, there was obviously some thought put behind that.
No, there's probably people a lot smarter than I am that put these charts together, and they're called actuaries. But
yeah, I was going to say that you have to take 10 tests to do that.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we do have another question here. Got a note here. Bill Lako's column was published on Sean Hannity's site this week, and we got a question via Twitter from Chip, a.k.a. Big Poppy in Hawaii. He says, I hope we are wrong, but I think next tax season will be pretty nasty. The question is, now that the stock market is up, is it the best time to increase 401k contributions to shield some money to lower the taxable income? I think no matter what the situation, it's probably always a good idea to save for retirement.
Absolutely.
And the fact that the government allows you to shelter some of that from your income, it really all you're doing is you're deferring the tax until you have to take it at 70.5, like we just went through that exercise. So you guys got
So even if the stock market's higher, you're putting money in, so he's saying maybe, you know, you're buying when it's higher, but you're also saving tax, and if you think tax rates are going to go up in the future and the market's going to go up in the future, it's still a good long-term investment and tax play.
Yeah, we talk about the 10-year rule all the time on this show, and the reason that we have a 10-year rule instead of, you know, say a 6-year rule is because there's only been, what, two rolling 10-year periods since 1926 where the market hasn't been higher in 10 years than it was in the beginning of the period.
Yeah,
and it was 11 years.
And it was 11
at that point.
A lot of the basis for our financial philosophy is statistics, and these are all historical facts about the market.
Yeah.
You know, you go back in time and determine just how long you could invest in the market, how long your time horizon would have to be where you wouldn't lose money or were not very likely to lose money. And then, you know, we go forward and try to alleviate the fears and emotions from individuals. Because we know the market is inherently volatile.
Yep.
You know, strange things happen. News breaks. Think about what's happened over the last 93 years, I think it is, since 1925. What all's happened? We had a Great Depression in 1929.
Couple of world wars.
Yeah. We've had, Korean conflict, Vietnam, even more recently, you know, some of the stuff
9/11.
In the Gulf. 9/11. We've had presidents impeached. Mr. Nixon, many recessions, including the one in 2008 you're referring to,
Shauna. The Great Recession.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I mean, particularly bad, 52% decline, and guess what?
We're
higher, and that's the point that we would make to Chip here is that, you know, if you're not going to need the money for 10 years, it doesn't really matter when you buy. I mean, this more than likely it's going to be higher when you actually go to cash it in to spend it.
Yeah. Well, and it is a tax break for you.
It is a tax break.
So,
for sure.
A lot of taxes are going down when we're looking at it, just depending on what tax bracket you're in. But it is a tax shield for you that can help you save money now. Of course, you'll pay later. But,
yeah. But I mean, what it does, it encourages us all, instead of consuming every dime we make, it encourages us to save some back so that we can have it later when we might not be capable of working.
Well, and especially if you have an employer match. Or something like that. You have to look at that too.
No doubt,
because that's just free money.
That's free money.
It really is. It's
well,
it's
you work
free.
For it, but
you do. Work
it's free
for
money.
It. Right. All right, guys. Well, hopefully, Chip, that answers your question. Guys, what do you think? Mark it up or down? You better be quick, Shauna.
Up.
All right.
Next I'm going to say down.
Wow. KC's a wet blanket. I'm always up. You've been listening to Money Talks. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Meat locker.
Huh?
It's like a meat locker
going,
up here.
Why does it always go back to meat with you two? I don't understand.
Oh, you want some beef jerky? Got a whole sack?
Sure.
Got a sack of meat?
All material presented is compiled from sources believed to be reliable and current, but accuracy cannot be guaranteed. The contents are intended for general information purposes only. Information provided should not be the sole basis in making any decisions and is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified professional, such as a tax consultant, insurance advisor, or attorney. Although this material is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with respect to the subject matter, it may not apply in all situations. This is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments. It is not our intention to state, indicate, or imply in any manner that current or past results are indicative of future profitability or expectations. Portfolio holdings discussed are subject to change. There is no guarantee that in the future these securities will be held in Hensler accounts. As with all investments, there are associated inherent risks. Please obtain and review all financial material carefully before investing. Hensler is not licensed to offer or sell insurance products. This overview is not to be construed as an offer to purchase any insurance products.